Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. The international break is over, league action is back. Domenico Tedesco went unbeaten in his first couple of games. That was good news for the Red Devils. But we're here to talk about the Belgian Pro League. And once again, I am joined by Scott and Joris. Scott and Joris, how are you guys doing this evening?
Well, I'm in a particularly good mood, guys, because I'm just back from everyone's favourite small country. I've just had a lovely few days based in Mechelen. And naturally, I took the opportunity to drink as much Gooden Carlos as possible. In fact, I brought some back with me, which would be very disappointing if I didn't. So I had a great time. Managed to drop in on Cave. Met some Cave fans, got some interesting insights from them actually about how their season's been going, and I had generally a great time.
I thought you were going for Luxembourg when you said your favorite small country, but okay. We'll take this. and I'm also in a good mood, as you can see. I'm all right. Nothing too eventful happened, but I'm all right. Almost Easter, and the classics happened, of course. So yeah, it was a bit a sporty weekend, a sport watching weekend last weekend.
Yes, no, it definitely was. Although there really weren't many surprises in the Pro League. Maybe a couple of surprises in the Classics. I don't know, depends if you thought a Van der Poel or Van Aert would win over Pogacar. But let's move on to the football. Friday night, Antwerp, still without Vincent Janssen, but they did manage to beat Zulte-Waregem 2-0. Cercle Bruges, they beat Kortrijk 2-0 at home on the Saturday. Charleroi left it late to beat Westerlo 3-2. Salang got absolutely pummeled by Ghent. That one finished 5-0 with all the usual suspects scoring. Oost then just capitulated to lose 3-1 to Standard Liège. Genk left it late as well to beat Leuven 2-1. Erpen lost 1-0 at home to Anderlecht. Club Brugge put out a convincing performance against Mechelen. That one finished 3-0. And then Union Saint-Gilloise, much like the other sides, did leave it late as well to beat Sint-Truiden 2-1. Let's start in Waregem then, where, yeah, as I said, no Vincent Janssen still for Antwerp, but who needs him when you've got Toby Alderweireld, the goal-scoring centre-back, apparently. He got the opening goal, but that didn't come until the 85th minute. Lots of chances for Antwerp, lots of the ball for Antwerp, but they just couldn't find the back of the net until they get a free kick in at that late stage of the game. Ball eventually comes in. Alderweireld flicks it over Boston into the goal, 1-0. They then get a penalty in, basically, I think about 4 minutes later. And Alderweireld steps up to take that as well, obviously, without Janssen. He did actually say, I think, after the game that he reckons he should be taking penalties more often. I don't know about that, but it was a decent pen from him. No Zeno Gano for Zulte-Waregem, but they just didn't really kind of have much of the ball or have much of a say in this one, unfortunately for them. But they're quite lucky that results elsewhere went their way, so it's still a 3-point gap that they are kind of facing in terms of getting to safety. For Antwerp, turns things around after that defeat just before the international break against Charleroi. Good for them to win without Vincent Janssen as well. Yeah, I guess there's not too much else to kind of say about this one apart from, yeah, Antwerp left it late, but probably did deserve to take all 3 points at the end of the day.
Yeah, they completely dominated this game, guys. I thought they were very good. Should have been well out of sight before they were. You know, could easily have scored 4 or 5, really, with some of the chances that they'd created, and are continuing to look very good. They've been on an extremely impressive run of form, as we know, since they came back from the World Cup. Which keeps them right in the title hunt, and you know, I think they're looking good and feeling good going into the playoffs. Zulte, on the other hand, are just hoping really for a bit of luck and perhaps a miracle of sorts now. The next 2 or 3 weeks are going to be pivotal for them, as they will be for another couple of sides. They have 3 massive games still to come. They have Charleroi away. The really big one, I suppose, is Eupen away. And then the final game of the season, they're at home to Circle. So it's kind of coming to a head, but I'm not confident they're going to get out of it.
Yeah, and of course that three points gap is actually a 4 points gap, as they need to get more points than Eupen. So they need to get at least 4 points out of these three games. And yeah, three of those need to come from that game against Eupen in that case as well. So they can only manage to lose one anymore. So there's not much room for error anymore. And it's the first game in 2 months that they haven't scored a goal as well. That was also noteworthy. On the Antwerp side of things, they were still missing Jansen. Again, like Scott said, they had a lot of chances, but they also had a lot of chances against Charleroi and they didn't manage to score. And here, Il Niente, they did it through the two players that actually did come back into the team. They definitely did need them then in Stengs and Alderweireld. Antwerp is now also the officially qualified for the Champions playoffs. Not that anyone really doubted that anymore, I guess, but now it's also official. One last thing to mention, it's apart from the game, I guess, the nice tribute that the Antwerp fans and the Zulte fans as well, I believe, gave to Super Jack, an 11-year-old kid that last week that plays with partner club Capella in the amateur divisions, well, in the youth ranks, of course, but also trained this season at the Antwerp Academy as well, but that unfortunately died with a tragic accident with a wall at his school, collapsing and unfortunately landing on the wrong places, and did not make it. So I guess that's worth mentioning outside of football stuff, and just a nice tribute for Super Jack.
Yeah, and absolutely, really, really horrible event that happened. It was nice to see, both sides paying tribute to him. It's just, such a tragedy. There was another near miss tragedy, which we'll maybe talk about later as well. It just seems to have been a bit of a weird one off the pitch, and a bit of a sad one as well. Let's move on to Saturday, which was April Fool's Day. I guess cheesy, but Cercle Bruges definitely made Courtrai look like fools. They really did dominate them. It could have easily been way more than it was. Ueda thought he'd opened the scoring quite early. I think it was in the third minute. But he was given offside after VAR. They then deservedly took the lead. Lovely flowing counter move, cross to the back post. Thibaut Sommer's there to head it home. He just bullied the Courtrai defenders. It was one of those ones where he just wanted the ball more. Courtrai then give away a penalty after a foul, I think it was on Olivier Demann. Upsets Ueda to slot it in, get his 15th league goal of the season, I believe. It's a good return from him. And that's basically how it stayed. Miyeki did make a couple of really good saves coming back into the side, just kind of reiterating his position as the side's number one. Yeah, Selemani on the bench for Courtrai did eventually come on. Strange because, he was injured and there was those injuries concerned. And then he was just like starting for the Comoros Islands during the AFCON qualifiers, which I thought probably wound a couple of Courtrai squad members or coaching staff up to see their injured player who couldn't play the last couple of games and starting for his country. But he did come on. They didn't really have much to get back into the game, to be honest. It was quite a routine win, I guess you could say, from Cercle, despite having less possession. And for the time being, it had put them into that kind of playoff two spot, which is, really hotly contested for that number eight position at the moment. For Courtrai, I mean, it was a nice chance. It would have been a nice chance that even if they'd managed to pick up a point to kind of not confirm safety for definite, if my maths is right, but pretty much they would be safe. They're still not safe, but I think they probably are going to be given the way the other sides are playing. But good win for Cercle. For Courtrai, if they can just maybe get another point within the next couple of games, they should be fine.
Yeah, it was routine stuff for Cercle. They're pretty decent. An efficient form is continuing. And I think, as we've been saying recently, guys, I think that last European spot is probably going to go to the final weekend of games until we know who's actually going to seal that it's that tight now. Didn't think it was going to go this way, actually. Even 3 or 4 weeks ago, it didn't look like it was going to quite turn out to be as exciting as this for that last spot. Kirkcaldy not doing enough this weekend, really, to get anything out of this game at all. I think this is a completely, you know, fair result. But what a massive game the Carrolls have got coming up this weekend at home to Irpin. Equally massive for the Pandas as well. I think a win for either side there will see an end to the sides currently in the bottom three and kind of seal it. In fact, it could have happened this weekend, but results didn't quite go Irpin's way either. So, you know, they've got to go to this weekend's game. But Kirkcaldy's home game against Irpin is certainly one of the big games to watch this weekend. And if you can only watch one, I would definitely suggest watching that one, because that should be tasty with there being so much at stake.
I would decide definitely last next weekend decide completely different games on higher up on the table. Actually, if you want to pick one game, like this is a bad weekend to pick one game. But anyway, especially since I do think Kortrijk is actually safe because of the other results this weekend, no matter that they lost as well, whatever they still do in the rest of the season. So I don't put that much importance for that side of the game on it. Yeah, very clumsy attacker, very clumsy, typical attacking attacker in the box, in the own box move for that penalty from Massimo Bruno on the man, indeed. Yeah, that really already put the game to an end. For also nice to see again the man and Somers for the combination for that first goal. So, I always like it to see. Yeah, young youth players coming through the youth ranks, being decisive and then together as well. That's definitely always nice to see. And yeah, unfortunately, then equally unfortunately for Cirkel, that they are the lowest ranked team that has picked up points and being in 10th place still after the weekend. Which means, well, they did what they needed to do, but unfortunately everyone else around them also did, so that doesn't improve their situation, as they still need to climb up slightly to get into the playoffs. But well, of course, still a routine but an important win for them. But this, I think that's a bit of the theme of the whole weekend, though, that everyone did what they needed to do at a certain end of the table, and at the other end of the table the opposite happened. And well, there were no draws, so that's also worth mentioning for the whole weekend. But
yeah, kind of just maintained the status quo at the bottom of the table, didn't it, really? But yeah, let's move on to Veselo and this kind of hunt for the second playoff spot. Veselo at that point probably still in with a slim chance of playoff one. It was a former Kortrijk player who actually gave them the lead, Matthias Fixels, scoring at the back post within the first 10 minutes. But then Charleroi were quite clinical on the counter in this one. Bayo getting the equaliser on the 35th. And then Mbenza put in one of the best crosses of the season to find Dan Heermans at the back stick, literally 4 or 5 minutes after Bayo had given them the equaliser. That made it 2-1 to Charleroi. Veselo then get a penalty in the dying minutes. Turdek steps up, looks like he's rescued a point for them. Maybe they can go on and win it, but then again, like a couple of minutes later, they chuck it away. Yusuf Badji getting his third goal in 4 games now, his 4th of the season. So he's just suddenly come of age in terms of scoring. Great win for Charleroi, then move them into the kind of playoff 2 spots. Veselo had 17 shots in this one. Charleroi had 12, so plenty of chances for both sides. They're probably going to be okay, but Veselo are now in this position where they could slip out of the second playoff spot, which is remarkable. You wouldn't have probably predicted that a couple of weeks ago. Another win should, in theory, be enough for them because they've won a fair amount of games because of that. But yeah, for Charleroi, it keeps them in the hunt. So it was a really, really big win. And it's nice to see Badji scoring a little bit more regularly. He's definitely had a crisis of confidence over the last year and a half. So it's nice to see him getting amongst the goals. And yeah, Mazu and Coffey had a bit of an embrace at the end. And you could really see kind of that emotion again that we were used to seeing at Union that we hadn't really seen when he was at Anderlecht.
Yeah, I think Felice really enjoyed that one this weekend, and Charleroi's generally improving form, as it has been for a number of weeks now, kind of continues. I think that's 5 wins in 7 now for them, and they're kind of coming into, you know, a good run of consistent form, just at a crucial point in the season. You know, you're talking about the playoffs just looming in the horizon now. And obviously they still have that closed door replayed game against Mechelen to come, which could yet, as we were saying recently, turn out to be decisive. I think Ben's right. I think Westerlo probably do need 1 win from their final 3 games to kind of secure a playoff 2 spot. And it's odd, isn't it, how quickly things can change. It felt like only yesterday that we were talking about Westerlo as an outside possibility if they could maintain their form for a playoff 1 spot. But now they're needing a win really to kind of hold on to a playoff 2 spot, which I think they will get. I think their last 3 games are kind of quite tough. They've got Anderlecht away, Club Brugge at home, and their final game of the season, the regular season anyway, is away to Serang. So that might be the one for them. They actually played quite well this weekend, Westerlo. I thought they were unlucky not to at least get a point, but Charleroi were certainly the more efficient of the two sides. And as we know, it's not always about how much of the ball you have. It's all about what you do with it. And they were certainly kind of killer with their kind of contributions. And things are ticking over kind of nicely at Charleroi at the moment. And as I was saying, I think it is definitely going to go to the final weekend to see who kind of grabs that final spot. And judging by the way a lot of games have finished for a number of weeks now, we might yet be going well into stoppage time in the final game before we find out who seals that. And it wouldn't surprise me at all with the way things have been for a long time now, whether it was a very dramatic late stoppage time goal that had a massive impact yet on who was to grab that final spot.
Well, most likely it's more what's decided in on the legal court that will decide down on that. That's also the more typical Belgian way, I fear. Like, Cercle was the lowest ranked team that has won. Westerlo is the only team inside the whole top 10 that has lost their game, and that proved, like you already gave the consequences there. It could prove very costly. I do think indeed they would seal it with one more win, and they should come against Serret. But on the other hand, you don't really want to go into that last game. Yeah, being Westerlo, I don't think you want to be in that going to the wire and grab some result against one of the other sides in Anderlecht and Club Brugge, which, well, they've proven they can, though, of course. So they've beaten both of them in the first legs of the league. But still, yeah, I don't think that they'd like to have it going to the wire, especially since it's not only about getting into that playoff, I guess, but also being in a good position to still get that top position in the playoff, which is the only one that's actually, well, worth something inside the playoff already. Charleroi, on the other hand, taking their moments. And yeah, Badji is really on a fine form. Well, also, I haven't seen him scoring a goal like this either. It's like, usually he's more of a scrappy goal scorer, which is, well, there's no, I don't mean anything bad with that, but like, this was really a really good goal, especially since, yeah, he only came on a bit later in the game because he was sick, actually. So I'm not sure if it was really good for him to play, but so I don't think he felt any of the sickness after after that shot left his foot, basically, already. That feeling is always really nice when it then goes in as well. And to grab the with that goal, yeah, very important 3 points for Charleroi. That must have felt good and cured him immediately, I guess.
Yeah, nature's best cure, I reckon, scoring goals. Make anyone feel better. Someone that loves scoring goals, or two people that love scoring goals, are Gift Orban and Hugo Kuipers, and they did just that against poor old Serang. Serang finishing the game with no shots on target. Getting only a 10 on target, but 5 of those went in. Orban opened the scoring in the 18th minute, and remarkably, it was only 1-0 at half-time. But then Serang thought, we'll give a gift, pass back to the goalkeeper, Deitch, just nowhere near him. Gift Orban picks it up and runs through. Kuipers then, with one that Deitch just, he just should have done a lot better with, just kind of like flopped it into the goal. Even Kuipers looked a bit embarrassed. Jordan Tuonariga then scored, and this one made me laugh more because I think it was Okumu with a cross to Tuonariga, which was just bizarre. Like, of all the two players to link up, you wouldn't think it'd be
that was one of my notes. Yes, definitely, remarkable indeed. That it was indeed those two.
You know, you rewind and you're like, was that really him that did that? Yeah, no, those two. Yeah, to be fair, it's like Tuonariga going forward, he's actually not actually that bad. He can definitely, those two are quite good at playing out from the back, but that was quite a funny moment. Then Kuipers got another one in the 77th minute to finish it off. I know before the game, Hein van Heijsenbroek had been like, oh, let's not get that. We have to be professional. We have to do the job. It's Serang, yes, but they're a difficult team to play against. And then you just go and absolutely destroy them in the second half. I mean, must have felt good. For Serang, that's pretty much curtains. Erpen could have made it definite curtains with a draw against Anderlecht or even a win, but they didn't do that. So they technically can stay up if they win other games and everyone loses their games. But I don't think they're going to win anymore with Club Brugge coming up next weekend. Then Union Saint-Gilloise. And then, yeah, as we mentioned, Vesselo, who may be going into that needing a win themselves. So difficult running. That probably is the end of them. For Ghent, it's just a good solid win to keep them ahead of Club Brugge, win the games you expected to win, which is something they haven't always been doing. Four wins on the bounce as well, so they really are coming into the playoffs with a little bit of form. It's just whether they can hold on for these last three games to get the top four spot.
Yeah, I think the big story to come out of this game, other than the Buffaloes being really clinical, really, really good, efficient, professional performance from them, I think, you know, getting their attitude right, as Ben was saying there as well, because this would have been easy to perhaps have assumed it was going to be an easy away win. And Big Hein, I think you're right, Ben. I think you were absolutely delighted to come away with that, with a thumping win. But yeah, the big story is, I suppose, the return of Tarek Tisadali, somebody we've all missed for a while now. Just one of the top Pro League players. And it's great to see him back getting 25 minutes under his belt as well. At a really crucial point in the season, kind of coming into the playoffs as well. And with European football there, it just gives everybody at the Galamco a massive boost, I think, because he is, as we all know, he can make the difference in games. Kuipers, obviously top scorer now, 18 goals in the league. He's also the top shot taker as well, with 86 shots throughout the season, which is interesting, just underlining kind of what a good marksman he is. And I just wonder whether they can hold on to him this summer, because they have a plethora of options up top now, between obviously Tisadali, Kuipers and Orban, and some really interesting choices there for Big Hein to play with. And he'll be really hoping that he can hold on to be honest, all of them, and maybe see what they can do next season, because if those players can kind of stay fit and they can maintain the form they're in at the moment, then, you know, they could have a very promising season next season. But we've said this before about Ghent, and they've disappointed us massively, so it really does depend on what happens in the summer there. But their form is peaking at the right point, and is just managing to keep them ahead of club in the race for that final championship playoff place at the moment.
And with a big game against Union coming up next weekend, that will probably be the crucial game for them in that race. So that's one of those other games that I would maybe keep an eye out on for several reasons for next week. Apart from that, in Ghent as well, well, other off-the-field news, okay, the Tisadali news is actually on the field now, of course, but apart from Tisadali returning, there is also, like we were talking about in the last regular episode that we have, what we had, Ungadur is indeed, gone to China now, so they won't be having him for the final weeks of the season. If there are no injuries, then they might be fine with that, but unfortunately, all of their defenders have been relatively injury prone this season. No big injuries, but if something would happen that could harm them inside one game, and we know every game counts now even more than it does otherwise. So yeah, Kuipers 18 goals now. Orban has now 9 in, well, I guess we can probably talk about his stats every week now, with 9 goals and 2 assists in 7 league games. Might he still catch Kaprizov at this rhythm? We'll have to see. Well, of course, 5 of those goals, I think, or no, 6 of these goals even, have come against Zulte Waregem and Serre. So that's not that you still have to make them, of course, but normally the opposition will be a bit stronger for most of the games. Yeah, and then to Serre, indeed, they have to win all games now. And I personally also indeed like think in a few days' time they will officially be relegated. If on paper it very much looks like that, and if it's not this week, I fear it for them at least, that it's going to be it's really mission impossible for them. If anyone needs a miracle, it's really them. They need to win everything, and indeed there's certain teams that cannot get any points until then. Yeah, it was this curious case as well. Chibabwa was apparently, supposed to be suspended during the game. Kent might have had a case for a forfeit, but, the game ended 0-5 anyway. So I guess at this point, there's no point in doing that. They to only take away the goals from their goal scorers, I suppose. in the end, no harm done there, I guess.
So Chibabwa actually started the game. To make it even funnier, it looks like he was starting in the back three with Lapointe and Mbao. So I mean, what absolute carnage. I'm genuinely intrigued to see what they are going to be next season when they win the Challenger. What type of team are they going to be? Like, there's such a mystery side in terms of how many of these players are still going to be there, because they have to put this together, this makeshift team. How many of these players are like valuable enough that other Pro League sides will come in and get them, because most of them will just probably be squad players if you're looking at any of them. So, yeah, there's such...
I think it's going to be hugely difficult for them, isn't it, Ben, next year when they do go down? Let's just make that assumption. I think that's a fair prediction now, just because of the fact that 3 teams are going down. That division, the Challenger next year, is going to be harder than ever to get out of, and I think even more competitive. And I think for a small club like Serang, who are obviously spending what money they do have at the moment on building a new training complex as well, which is definitely going to happen. So they're in the process of trying to upgrade their facilities. We know that money is in short supply down in the Challenger, particularly from the point of view of making money available to invest in the team on the pitch. So I think it's going to be very hard for them to remain really, really competitive at the top end of the Challenger next season. That's for sure. And I think they've known that for a while, though. I don't think that's a surprise to them.
No.
But I already have to correct myself from earlier. Apparently, so I was already corrected as well. He was not suspended, Chibabwa. The misconception came because of, he got the... He got some yellow cards both at in the senior squad and in the under 23 squads, and they are not counted together.
Chaos.
That's to clarify that.
What a confusing situation. It doesn't really make sense. Yeah, sorry. Just on kind of all that with Serang, I think they've got 9 players under contract from this side next season. So whatever it's going to look like, it's going to look different and slightly odd. And some of those players that would probably be a little bit more, that they could have got maybe something for, are all leaving on a free by the look of it. So who knows? But they'll probably bring back Christophe Lapointe. I'm sure he can do another job in the second tier again. He's not allowed to retire just yet. Let's go to the Saturday night game, shall we? Which was on the coast. Oostend against Standards, and this kind of a 20 minutes of madness kind of ended this one. Noah High has been given both of the goals from some things I've seen. Barak's been given an own goal. I don't know what you want to call it. Kind of, it's a cross to the back post. He flicks it towards goal. Hubert just flaps. Like, I don't know what he's doing. He's just got to catch it, surely. Like, it's really easy.
My word.
And then Barak, it kind of like hits Barak and goes in. So, I mean, technically it's an on-target something from Ohio. I don't know if it's a shot, but I think I'd give it as an own goal for Huber and Barak. I think they should share it for both making a massive mistake. Ahiden definitely gets a goal 3 minutes later. Lovely through ball. I think it's from Zinkernagel. He's just got so much space to run through just a one-on-one, I think, with Uga Hyde at that point, or Rodin, one of those two, and he just slots it past Huber to make it 2-0. And then Marlon Fossey scores. Rare goal scorer. This was quite a funny one, actually. He just kind of comes out of nowhere and just like launches himself with the ball with a diving header. Just kind of what we were saying earlier about the Thibaut Sommers one with that. It was just that desire to get on the ball. And that's what Fossey showed here to head this one home. I've quite actually liked what I've seen from Fossey. I think there's moments kind of rawness, but there's definitely a talented kind of player in there. Usen do get one back through Kelvin Arase. I think that must have been his first goal for the club just before half time. Uga Hyde then gets himself sent off in just before the hour, which we've seen this before where they just kind of shoot themselves in the foot with any chance of getting back into a game. They did manage a lot of shots, but they just had less. They didn't have enough of the ball, and that kind of that first 20 minutes just killed anything that East End could have done in this game. And then, yeah, like I said, going down to 10 men again just completely kind of shunted everything for them. I've seen Barak come in with a lot of criticism in the Belgian press after this game. Even though when he first kind of came into the side, they started defending a little bit better. But yeah, he's really kind of been attacked by the press for this one. Just not an ideal result for them. Whereas for Standard, keeps the pressure on, I guess, for playoff one. But I think with the 5-point gap they have to Ghent at the moment, and then with the wins as well, it's very unlikely that they're going to make it into playoff one. But on the balance of things, playoff two is still a successful season for them, considering where they were at the beginning of it.
Yeah, what could have been if they hadn't dropped some silly points in games where they really shouldn't have. You know, we've been touching on this on and off throughout the season. Yeah, what could have been? I thought Standard looked pretty decent this week, actually. Noah Hyo is somebody who I think has been generally looking better and better. And I think seems to quite enjoy life under Ronnie Dyla. He's got 4 goals and 18 now and 3 assists, but he's only had 8 starts in those 18. So when you bear that in mind, actually, those stats I think are actually quite good. But he's starting to get himself into very good positions in games, I think, and work channels very well, and is getting pretty good at timing his runs. So I think there's a lot of potential there. They will want to hold on to him, I think, because I think he has a lot to offer Standard, and I think next season could be a very big one for him if he can continue developing the way that he is. Oostend very poor this weekend. I mean, giving it, as you know, Ben was saying, you know when you go 2-0 down inside the first kind of 10-11 minutes of a game, then it's always going to be an uphill struggle chasing things, and then you lose a man late on. Must be hugely frustrating for Dominic Talhammer. I thought that first goal, Uber had a bit of a nightmare, to be honest. That was just one of those ones where you hope the ground just opens up and swallows you up, really. Wasn't me, Gov, I wasn't here. But looking at Oostend's last 3 games, they've got St Truiden away, Leuven at home and Ghent away, and they're still in it. I think, they have this, we just need to keep believing type attitude. That seems to be the impression I've got. But we know, looking at the run of form, there's certainly nothing at the moment to suggest that they're going to get enough points out of these final 3, and I think they're probably just hoping that Open aren't able to do anything in their remaining 3 games, because at the moment, I think Open stand the best chance of picking up just enough points to kind of keep themselves out of this and to escape the drop. But we'll see what happens, because the wheel turns quickly.
Shocking defending for these first 2 goals, of course, as well. Like, yeah, and then the game was basically over. Also, Uro Gide got his second red card of the season, the 9th for Oostende as a team. That does not help if you're in a relegation scrap. Well, they're the only other team that also has 9 is actually the opponent from last weekend, so Standard, to be clear. But yeah, other teams that are having a lot of cards are Sint-Truiden, Seren, Zotwaregem, Eupen, Kortrijk. Well, you get the gist. Not teams that are doing so well, so that's never a good indicator. It's part of the playing style of it as well, but yeah, many of those are also just very clumsy ones, including this one. in Standard, difficult to judge actually. Like, despite the win, like, until the red, until that red card, I still had the feeling like somehow I still saw the signs of like the Oostende, if they somehow get that second goal, they still could crumble. So I'm not sure if we can make many conclusions on that. If they learned their lessons a bit more, in the end they created a lot more chances, of course. But yeah, that when Oostende was really going all in and with one man down, there was a lot of space. Perica missed a few their chances as well, that he normally should score. Well, anyone normally should score. Yeah, Ohio indeed doubling his tally for the season, or not, depending if you get that first goal, give it to Ohio. Transfermarkt does that, but I think on TV it was shown that it was an own goal from Barac. Yeah, I also feel like it's more like an own goal from someone from Austin. If it's not Barac, then maybe Hubert himself even. But yeah, nonetheless, he had a good game. Well, in his finishing, at least, he wasn't so present in this game, to be fair. There were other players at Standard side that were standing out a bit more. But yeah, routine win, and the game was over after 20 minutes or so. When was the third goal? But even after the second goal, it was already... I think that's 12 minutes. So routine win. And looking dire for Oostende as well, indeed, with all the circumstances, even if they're even still level on points with Zultenwagen, still their situation looks worse than theirs at the moment.
Yeah, again, another side that's going to be really interesting to see if they do go down, what sort of iteration of their kind of playing squad's going to look like next season, because, yeah, a lot of these players are probably going to have to go, and they're going to have to, yeah, do something differently to what they've been doing over the past couple of years, which is what their fans want.
I'm very worried for all three teams that are currently in the, well, actually all teams, any team that would relegate this season. I'm a bit worried, especially Oostende, to be honest, as well, with the whole investor and the fans indeed not being completely around there. It will be chaos a bit, and let's hope for them that they come out of it in a better way than expected. But I would not be surprised if they actually come out really, well, really bad. Even hopefully the club still can exist. That's actually that bad is what I'm thinking even. Yeah,
I think, you know, Joris highlights something really important there. Obviously, there's ownership issues, you know, Oostende that are rumbling on, and there are ongoing talks about a sale at the moment with the owners of Wolves. But, you know, the debt that Joris is alluding to there, I think, is a big issue, and it is such that could become a factor and certainly what happens longer term, and it will certainly be a factor in those negotiations and what the asking price might actually be as well. And you do wonder whether the potential investors, new investors, are just waiting to see whether they can escape relegation or not, because as often in these cases, that's going to change the nature of the conversation and also how interesting they are as a club potentially as well, regardless of what division that they're
yeah,
in.
Yeah, indeed. Obviously, on sportive merits, they might not align with the business merits there as well. I guess if they would go down, they might be cheaper to invest in. Also, of course, need to always give that asterisk. You know, of course, going down this season doesn't. It's next season a bit easier to go up. Well, I think this season is the worst season to be in the Challenger Pro League regarding chances of getting back up. That perspective might maybe also make people more likely to maybe invest in one of the, well, some of those teams. I don't think Serain is in a good position by themselves either anyway. And Zultenwagen, also tough to say, but they also would be definitely looking to other investors, if I'm not mistaken. Then there might be some interest there, I think, from the teams that are currently down there, of course. And they're already, of course, in foreign hands. I'm not sure if many things would change there. But if that's good for the club, another thing.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think the East End stuff is just like, you're looking at it and you're like, well, they've sold players and they've got money coming in from player sales. It's like, well, that's what the fans have been saying. It's like, where is this going? Why is this being like siphoned off to these other random clubs that they own? which have all been relegated anyway, like Barnsley went down, Nancy went down, Eastend are probably going to go down. It's like the track record's bad, isn't it? And I think that's like in terms of football ownership as well. Like you've seen it with other clubs. We've seen it with owners in this league as well, in the Belgian league, who have come in, run clubs into the ground, and they're still running clubs elsewhere. People who know the team that I support will probably know that this is currently close to home because my team's just been deducted 6 points because of an owner that ran a Chinese club into the ground, ran Roselaar, the Belgian side. They didn't exist in the form that they existed for when he was there. So there's lots of bad ownership out there. And it's just really, really frustrating that there's enough kind of good football people around that you could just put these guys, like there's enough people that know how to run a football club that you could employ that would be able to do it properly. And they've been able to bring money in because they've had good players. Like you think about the Blessing season, like obviously now that's just a massive anomaly, but the feeling around the club was so different. Like everything was so different. Like it felt like this was the start of something, but that's just been completely ripped apart and there's just been rubbish ever since, really. So yeah, feeling for East End fans, kind of not just because of what's happening on the pitch, but it's the off the pitch stuff that's equally as worrying for them. So let's hope the current owners leave and that new ownership does come in that can kind of steady things and start to improve what could be or could have been something really quite special when Blessing was there. Anyway, let's move on to a side that might have just been fined for something as well, but we'll maybe get into that another time. Let's talk about Genk against Leuven. Brian Heenan celebrating, I think it was 250 appearances. I can never work out, was this his 251st or did he make his 250th in this
251st.
Game? 251st. I can never really work.
Yes.
It was the 251st. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, I was trying to work out which one he was already celebrating it. It was a bit of like, here's the thing, but like, oh, what if he didn't start?
Or yeah, it's the first home game since that achievement, so that's right.
Yeah. It was quite fitting that he did open the scoring as well in the 23rd minute to make it 1-0 to Genk. Leuven then got themselves back level in the second half with a penalty from John Dagger Thorsteinsson. He's just, yeah, having a really, really great season for them. 22 shots for Genk, but they could not get the second goal until the 87th minute. Mike Tressel steps up with a wonderful free kick into... is it in the corner? I'm not sure. We're probably going to talk about Wolves again, aren't we? And goalkeepers and all that sort of stuff. Koji Kai did make a couple of good saves, actually, in this game to deny Genk. But I don't know. I'll let you guys talk about that one. But it finished 2-1 to Genk. Really, really important win. Nice of Brian Henn to celebrate it with a goal and kind of that moment. Obviously, as it's Genk, we'll go to Joris first on this one. What were your kind of thoughts from this one?
Well, the game should have been decided way earlier than it eventually did. That's one thing. Well, which is relatively encouraging in one way and worrying in the other, I suppose. They are still creating a lot of chances. They are not converting enough of them. And, not going to talk about why that is anymore. But, it is a bit worrying. But at least Tresor stepped up and put it away in one of the final minutes before injury time, of course. That was before stoppage time, which was quite long. But, it was also one of his first good touches throughout the whole game. That's also why he kept his place at least until then, I suppose. Yeah, and Hanna indeed, 250th game, 251st game, 10th goal of the season as well. So another record anyway for him. And also good to finally win a game again. That's the most important takeaway, I suppose, especially if you then look at the other teams in the top three also played relatively well, it doesn't even matter how they played, but they also only scraped the victory in the goals in the final minutes. So it's not that Genk is alone in that. El Canoes had a great game, actually. Couldn't really see it on the highlights or anything, but especially in the first half, he was involved everywhere. yeah, I also feel like that well, don't want to go too much into it, but that I'm not sure that was a penalty, especially if that was something that the VAR should have intervened in. But okay, in the end, that's a footnote. Apart from that, Leuven didn't really create much. I don't have that many notes on them even. It really looks like that their season is petering out. They're like in the middle of the table, but without really any purpose anymore for higher hopes either. But they're safe. So I guess they should be slowly looking at next season already in this upcoming months. And there was one big chance that Van der Voort held nicely, but I think that's the only real tangible danger that they created outside of their goal. And so that was a penalty, and then the face that led to that penalty. But even there, actually, the finishing wasn't really there. Good to grab a win. To get out of that international break with some positive vibes in the end, but the game should have been decided earlier. Oh yeah, one more thing, of course, the Paintsill being that Paintsill miss is probably really the miss of the season for me, because Hannah's ball probably would have just gone in. It would have been his second of the game, and Paintsill decided to try to tap it in still, but unfortunately mishit the ball completely, and Kojakara did really well then to save that ball nonetheless. But yeah, normally the ball would not have been inside his reach whatsoever. Luckily that in the end it didn't matter either.
Yeah, I think, Joris's summary is actually very good. I would agree with all of that, particularly the point as well about, Genk looking better, I think, this week than they've done for a number of weeks in terms of, dominating the game, getting back to winning ways, perhaps, as Joris was saying, making it slightly more difficult for themselves than they needed to at times. Leuven had their chances in this game, actually, and potentially could have got something out of it, but I think if they had it, probably would have been undeserved, actually, on the balance of play. Curious to get Joris's thoughts on the penalty. I know that was something that Wouter Franken was really not happy with. I think he felt there was very little contact at all. Although, from most angles it does look like a penalty, but when you look at it again a little bit closer, I can actually see why Franken was frustrated, because it looks like one of those, looks like a stonewaller at the time, but when you look at it a bit closer, I think there's definitely some room for doubt there. And we have to mention Mike Trezor. I mean, we know he's the assist king. I mean, that goes without saying, so far ahead of everybody else, but you can fair chip him with his goals, and what a cracking late winner this was. Wonderful technique from that free kick to not the only side to win dramatically late on at the top this weekend as well. I suppose the big story from a Leuven point of view is one that took place off the pitch, though, isn't it, guys?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, it was. There's still kind of stuff to come out of it, but there's just, if you haven't seen the video, it's just ridiculous. It's just Sophie and Kieran driving. Someone said about 200 kilometers an hour, just kind of coming up to a roundabout, doesn't stop, flies off the roundabout and just flies through a sports hall. Like, it's mental to even like think how it happened. Thankfully, no one was hurt apart from him, which obviously sounds bad, but he didn't cause any damage to anyone else. And actually, he's been discharged from hospital, which when you see the video and everything that happened, it's remarkable that he was fine. Like, I don't know how he survived it. And then that no one was... I've heard conflicting things. Like, either the kids were all getting changed or they were on the opposite side of the sports hall, so no one was hurt. But absolute madness that this has happened. And obviously there's now going to be an investigation into what caused it, why he was going that fast in that area. Like, it looked like he was overtaking, but he didn't need to go that fast to overtake at that point in the road. Like, it was all just a bit crazy. And thankfully, yeah, it's not been worse than it actually was. Like, this could have been really, really tragic and really, really sad that something horrendous could have happened. But thankfully, nothing has. I think he has been suspended pending the investigation by the club. So we just kind of have to wait and see about that. But yeah, if you haven't read or heard about that story, I mean, yeah, it's just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the footage in particular, if you haven't seen that's rather extraordinary. The speed that he appears to be going at, no idea what his actual speed was, but you know, when you see it, you know, it's clearly, you know, it's pretty wild stuff. It's dark and it just has this weird quality of it. It looks like a car going through, you know, a kind of cardboard box. It's just it is a bit of a miracle that nobody was hurt and that everybody's all right. I think the club have done the right thing, you know, suspending Sofian in the meantime, you know, until they can actually get to the bottom of this, because we don't know whether it was simply a case of obviously the issues with the driving or whether there was something more sinister on a technical level to do with the car going on here. We don't know, but he'll remain suspended certainly until all of those investigations are kind of concluded. I don't think it helped actually, and I remarked on this earlier on today to you guys, didn't I, that I don't think it helped that Kian's dad has come out today and spoke to the media and said some rather silly things. I think it's best to just kind of keep quiet at the moment, really, and not prejudge anything at all. I think that was quite ill-advised.
Yeah, because we haven't heard anything from him, the player, yet. So I think, yeah, it's just going to be a wait to see what comes out in this investigation and kind of move on from there. And yeah, we'll see if he's playing for them next season, depending on what happened. Let's go to the corners of Belgium, near the German border to Eupen. They hosted Anderlecht with the chance, yeah, to relegate Sarang and almost guarantee their own safety, or kind of really, really put some pressure on those two sides below them at least. But they just didn't really get anything going in this game, despite how important it was. Just one shot on target in the entire game. Although Verbruggen did at one point try and gift them a goal by just like really just nonchalantly coming through a cross and just dropping it everywhere. But they couldn't find the back of the net. Moser in the other goal had a great game, to be fair. He made some really, really big saves to keep Anderlecht out. It took them until the 50th minute set piece. Benito Rahm with a flick on header into the far corner. And that is how this one finished. Just 1-0. But like kind of Cercle Brugge jumped into eighth, and Charleroi jumped into eighth, then Anderlecht with their third win in three, they now jump into eighth with a point over both of those sides. Just 3 points behind Vesterlo. So they're kind of closing in on them a little bit. Obviously, depending on Charleroi's kind of that game in hand situation and all that. But not a routine win, I wouldn't say, for Anderlecht, because just 1-0, they really should have scored more goals on this one, but a much needed win, and just take the 3 points and head back to Brussels, I guess.
Yeah, I think that was the most important thing for them. I thought Brian Reimer's post-match comments were really insightful. You know, he was talking a lot about how he has no problem with them winning ugly. That's how he described it, which kind of underlines what you know what Ben's saying there about not necessarily it being their best performance of the season. Keeps that kind of momentum going for them, which obviously is the most important thing. But he did touch on the fact that he felt that they lost control of the game completely in the last sort of 25 minutes, which he certainly wasn't happy about, because we all know that, you know, he wants Anderlecht to go out there and to dominate teams and to dominate games. So even if they're not playing well, you know, he wants them to dominate possession as well. And they left themselves a little bit vulnerable in the last 20 minutes. And on another day, I think Eupen could have got a point out of this. They had two or three chances where they probably should have scored, but didn't. And I think that's what frustrates Brian Reimer. I think he realised that actually very easily they could have dropped 2 points here if they weren't careful. But yeah, their momentum's maintained, and the playoff two spot is very much still there for them.
Yeah, not that much to add there, but yes, Anderlecht. Well, Eupen will also be very frustrated, because I do think, based on these final 20 minutes only, though, I think both teams were not playing super well and were not on top of their game, which is for Anderlecht a bit disappointing in a way, maybe, because they are really, well, improving in their footballing levels as well. That was less present this time around. But, well, for Eupen then, like, of course, if they would win, get a win, if they would have won this game, I'd already think as well that together with Kortrijk, they would be over the line. Also, it would have made the outlook of that game between them maybe a bit easier in the sense of that both teams, yeah, might not necessarily need to really go for it. Well, and we all know how these kind of games maybe can help if one point might really be a take all both of them over the line, which is not completely the case, but yeah, it would be like a possible scenario that yeah, they got a bit unlucky in that part of the game with the ball hitting the post and a few more chances that Verbrugge did well, or they didn't manage still well in the attack as well. I guess Samuel said had a phase. I think that was earlier in the game though, but had a phase where he lost the ball. In a very good position. But so I guess both teams will feel like they could have done better here. But Anderlecht get the points, which is for them, I guess, the most important. They also got their third clean sheet in a row in the league. Albeit, again, like, of course, there was a ball hitting the post and it could have gone differently. But it's also their first win am Keerweg since 2017, which was also the only other time that they have won there. In 8 attempts only, though, of course, it's not open. It's not so long in the first division in Belgium either.
That's a pretty crazy stat, to be fair. One side that actually has been pretty good at home are Mechelen, but they were not good at home against Club Brugge. I don't know if you'd taken them for a night out before the game or something, Scott, while you were there, and they were just all a bit hungover because there's barely put up a fight against Club. Dimitri Lavery handballing in the box. Quite a harsh one. I don't know, but he was kind of like saying, where am I meant to put my hand? Referee saying, not on the ball. Noah Lang stepped up, scored, shushes the crowd, and thus began the booing of Noah Lang, who then responded to all the boos by putting the side 2-0 up. Mats Ritt's pass, actually, if you haven't seen it, it's the pass for this goal. It's ridiculous. Like, I don't know how he slots it through so many players to find Noah Lang. Really nice finish from him. 2-0 within 20 minutes. Those goals were separated by about 4. And that was kind of it, really. Like, Mechelen tried to get back into it, but they didn't really have enough quality. Brandon Mechelen made it 3-0. I think Thielen's, I don't know where he's going for this one. He's coming out, but he's never going to get the ball. But he's not really coming to get the ball. He's just kind of coming out to narrow down. I don't know. I literally don't know what he's doing, which is kind of related to a listener question we have later about the goalkeeping situation at Mechelen. But it was a bit weird of him to kind of like half come out, half not come out, and then the ball just go over his head anyway. Finished 3-0 to Club. It was a decent performance for them, to be fair. Like, they didn't really have to get going at any point to really put Mechelen under any pressure. Comfortable means they keep up with Ghent with just 2 points behind, so they know they just have to win out and hope that Ghent above them kind of slip up at some point, which, I mean, it could happen for them. I think Club, they've got Solang, then they face Vesalo, which could be a big one, and then they finish off their season against Erpen. So all three sides that they're playing, apart from maybe Solang, because they're pretty much down, the last two definitely have something to play for still, so they should be competitive games. But for Mechelen, I think it's very much the cup final's the most important thing, and we're just kind of getting these games out of the way until we get there.
Yeah, they were exceptionally poor this weekend, I thought. And to be fair, that's partly down to Club's performance. I thought they were playing with quite a high press this weekend, you know, and a good degree of intensity. And it's the best performance I've seen in them in a little while. And the international break looks like it did them the world of good and allowing them to kind of regroup. But yeah, exceptionally poor from Mechelen, particularly, you know, basic dueling stuff. You know, I think, you know, when you look at the numbers, actually, they're surprisingly bad, particularly for this game. I mean, Mechelen came out of this game winning only 20% of their duels, which is really, really poor. You know, even in a game where, you know, you've performed badly, that's quite shocking, I think. And you're not really going to get anything in a game when you've only got one shot on target. You know what I mean? You're just kind of asking for trouble, which was a shame, because I was around. And, you know, it just, like Ben was saying, you know, maybe it was my fault, but I think there was a feeling that, you know, this was going to be kind of quite a big game for them. in some ways. And it's just, you know, one of those results that goes in a long line with the inconsistencies. While I was in Mechelen over the last few days, I met quite a few Cavi fans, actually, and kind of took the opportunity just to kind of ask them how they feel about how the season's been going for them. And you know, they all seemed to agree that they felt that this year was going to be difficult post-Franken for lots of reasons, and that injuries have been very cruel to them. I think they're prepared to stick by Stephen Defour for a little bit longer, but I think they accept that, you know, the levels of inconsistency that we've seen from them this year, you know, have to be ironed out as much as possible next year, and that it will be difficult for them, you know, if they're not able to do that. But we know that their recruitment this season hasn't really been particularly successful for them either, and that's been another big negative impact on the inconsistency as well. So it's kind of quite a complex recipe that's led to a disappointing season. But having said all of that, if they go on to win the cup in a few weeks, then a lot of that will be forgotten and could yet be the silver lining in what has been generally a really, really poor season for them. Club, as Ben was saying, just need to kind of keep winning, really, and hope that Ghent don't or drop enough points for them to squeak in to kind of grab that last place. But it's not looking likely at the moment.
Yeah, like I think I agree with Ben, and well, also with what Scott is saying, like that everything hinges on that cup final, and it's really the only game that still counts for them. That's a bit unfortunate for Beker Verstappen, of course, who can't play in that game. But apart from that, also, this game was similarly to the Oostende Standard game, basically over after 20 minutes after these two goals. In a different way, of course, this time the goals were indeed more maybe, well, the quality of Kimbrie, and then less if defensive errors necessarily. The club really took the game into hand, and it was deserved as well. Yeah, first home loss for Mechelen in 10 games. Their longest ever streak is 12 games. So they got relatively close, but it didn't happen. So after 9 games undefeated, the 10th one was too much. Yeah, and for the rest, the routine win, I suppose, in the end, then for Kluivert, because of these early goals and keeping the hopes up for a Champions playoffs, doing what they needed to do. Not much, really much to add on to this.
Yeah, routine win again. I feel like we've just been saying routine win the last couple of weeks, haven't we? I wouldn't say Union's game against St. Truiden was a routine win for them. Probably a lot closer than they probably wanted it to be.
Well, in your way to win, though. Yeah. Although still a routine win.
Yeah, a routine kind of Union win, but not a routine win for everyone else. Yeah, no, I can get behind that. 63% possession, 11 shots, 7 on target. St. Truiden had 1 shot on target. That went in. Gianni Bruno after Mori Kanate assist. That gives him 15 goals for the season. I think he's on 7. I know he's definitely on 17 overall if you include the cup as well. So if he scores in each of the last games, he'll match that kind of 20 goals he got for Zoltavagem three seasons ago. So yeah, he's obviously their top scorer, like, quite easily. I think he's got 15, they've got 31. So yeah, shows how reliant they are on him to score the goals. However, Teddy Tuma with I haven't seen if this was deflected or not. If it wasn't, it was a really, really nice free kick from Teddy Tuma just into the back of the net in the 73rd to get Union back into it. They then snatch a late winner, 89th minute, Simon Odinga racing through. He squares it to Cameron Puertas, touch out of it, and then smashed it into the bottom corner from the edge of the box. Kanate then picks up his second yellow in the 92nd minute, so St. Truiden end the game with 10 men. Union keep winning. That's 4 wins on the bounce. They stay just 3 points behind Genk, so yeah, a good win for them. For St. Truiden, that's pretty much it. Season over, pretty much. Yeah, done and dusted. Time to start looking at who's going to be the new head coach, who's actually going to be there next season. There's just so much transition to go on at that club. And it's, in a way, I think it's good if they just don't make the playoffs and they can just kind of crack on with it from now, to be honest.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? You know, Mori Kanate getting sent off needlessly almost as if to say, do you know what, I can't be bothered with this. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to sign off for the season now. And obviously, Bernard Hollerbach getting sent to the stand as well, which just made me kind of think, okay, well, he's off in 3 weeks anyway. And that kind of sums up his frustration at the fact that, you know, we've been saying for ages now, things are just petering out for them. They'll be disappointed. I think they kind of couldn't hold out for something in this game, particularly taking the lead as well, just underlining how important a certain Mr. Bruno has been. I've been talking a lot about that recently as well, and that was the case in this game. One really good clear-cut opportunity, and he scores, underlining what Ben was saying. But Union doing Union things, you know, going to the very last whistle, and there's just something about the mentality in this side that we've been talking about for at least the last couple of years now, where, you know, they know what they need to do, and the majority of time they get the job done, and it's a real psychological battle now, as much as it is a numerical one, just to see who can sustain the pressure and who can kind of cope with it. Because Union on one hand are very much saying to Joris's side, the Genkies, look, we're still here, we're right over your shoulder, and Genk have to, you know, just effectively kind of keep winning. But, you know, I think it's looking increasingly likely now that it is definitely going to come down to the head-to-head between those sides in the playoffs. Having said that, I know a lot of Antwerp fans will, quite rightly, because of the rich vein of form they're in, probably disagree with us. I, for what it's worth, I do think it's a three-horse race. I think Antwerp are definitely still in this, but I just have a feeling that it's going to be down to the double headers between Union and Joris's side, the Genkies, to see who takes the title in the end.
I also do think it's more of a three-horse race anyway. It's going to be decided in the playoffs, as always. It always ends up like that, either way. I didn't even dare to hope, even after Cinderella scored, that Union would drop points here. I had no doubt that this would not happen here. Even though it very much could have. Like, as with Mel, I guess a lot of those occasions, it always, it's so little difference, but yeah. This was just not going to happen here. Also concluding that top three winning in the final minutes team that we had this week, I guess, together with the whole first half of the table winning from the second half of the table. Also, they also scored, I think, already in the first half with Nieuwkoop. I do think that ball, he headed the ball well in, I would say. Well, Schmidt saved it, but there's no complete clear image, so that's why it was also not given, because initially it wasn't given. But I personally feel that probably was a goal anyway. So
I think it was. Yeah. I think it was. Yeah.
And what else for Sinterrada? Indeed, not much to say. 15th for Bruno, you already said it. And like together with Leuven, they're like a bit stuck in the middle. They are officially relegated, not relegated, they're officially, well, not completely official yet, but they are very much likely not anymore in the playoff two race, Euro playoff race. Well, and maybe officially already, I don't know how it is with the fixtures between the teams around there even. But and indeed, season petering out, Hollerbach and Konate getting these red cards. So, they have a few calmer weeks in preparations for next season as well, which I feel like they definitely will need. But that's another topic we already talked about a lot about in the recent months already, I guess.
Yeah, and I think just kind of before we move on to the challenger, just kind of reflecting that at this point in the season, we've got, three games to go, and the only sides that have literally nothing to play for, they could still make it into playoff two, but they won't, are Leuven and St. Truiden. So two teams out of a 18-team league isn't that bad. Obviously, Salang technically really don't have anything to play for, but they could still stay up. So in theory, they do. But those two teams are kind of the only ones that are just like petering out season. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, and also talking about, to come back to talking about the psychological component as well, if Union win against Gent, this Saturday, they will be at least for one day next to Genk as well, so adding some more pressure to their game away at Standard as well. But yeah, these are definitely two games to look out for, because it can also could also go the complete other way, and Genk could be officially first after this week and after the regular season, depending on other results. Most likely, it's going to be something more in the middle of these things. But anyway, also on top, there's an interesting weekend coming up. Well, in all fronts, so definitely stay tuned.
Yeah, definitely. Scott was saying if there's one game you watch the Kortrijk Open game. But I think try and watch as many games as you can, because there's going to be so many good ones. Sneak away from that Easter Sunday if you're celebrating Easter to try and get some football watching in, especially in the evening for that Standard Genk game. Let's move on then to the challenger. Scott, over to you for this one, where, I mean, we have a title race, and this weekend could be some really, really big, like, kind of matches for that, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's all got a little bit tighter than it was this time last week, that's for sure, both at the top and the bottom, funnily enough. A quick score roundup, match day 5, of course, in the playoffs in the Challenger Pro League at the moment. Playoff 1, which is the promotion playoff, of course, saw Beveren thump Anderlecht Futures 4-0. And from what I saw of that, Beveren looked very, very good. There were some really nice goals in that game and some really high-quality football from them, I thought. Lierse lost 2-1 at home, conceding a couple of quite comedic goals to Club Next, who've had a fantastic playoffs so far, actually, really, really strong. And Molenbeek dropping points for the first time in a while against Beerschot. They drew one each in Antwerp against Beerschot, which basically means that Molenbeek remain top, but they're now only 1 point clear of Beveren. And I think everyone has their eyes on that massive game on the 16th of April, when Beveren go to Brussels to play Molenbeek. Obviously, there is a fixture before then, so we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves, but I think we've all had our eyes on that for a long time as being, you know, potentially the title deciding game. In playoff 2, the relegation playoff, Dender won 1-0 against Jong Genk. Denza thumped SL16 5-0, and Vertonghen went to Limburg to play Lommel and came away with a 2-1 win. In terms of the relegation playoff, Vertonghen remain bottom but have reduced the gap at the bottom to safety now somewhat because of the news just a few days ago that the complaint that Vertonghen had made. Everyone remember that game a few weeks ago when Jong Genk were playing SL16 and both sides fielded technically what were ineligible players? Well, Vertonghen complained about that the shared points in that game, because that game finished in a draw, and the disciplinary committee at the FA have decided that the right thing to do is to strip Jong Genk and SL16 of the point that they gained in that match. So Vertonghen are now, I think it's 5 points clear of safety, not 7 as it was. So, you know, they've left themselves some room for manoeuvre, but it's getting very interesting.
Okay, but yeah, Vertonghen are only virtually, because I would be surprised if no one appeals that though. So like I would not be surprised if that's something we cannot really say. But virtually, they are 2 points of Standard Liège and 3 points of Jong Genk at the moment. SL16, of course, that is. And well, first the first legs of the playoffs have been played now, so we're really stuck in the middle there as well. And yeah, everything still seems interesting at both ends, at least between a few teams.
Yeah, I think it's a case of that Beveren Molenbeek game obviously is the big one, and then I mean if Vertonghen stay up, that'd be quite remarkable. To be fair, but they are 3 unbeaten, so you never know. The great escape is certainly on for them. A couple of listener questions before we get out of here. First one from Sav2000. They ask, is it safe to assume Mechelen will activate the one-year extension on Cook, or are they likely to look for a new number one? Please God, not Thielen. I think I'd be shocked if they don't activate it. Whether they keep him, I feel like the buzz around him this season has been less than last season in terms of outside interest. Mm. So I'm sure they'll activate it. Whether he will still be their number one depends on kind of that interest and offers that come in for him, if they do come in for him. I don't know if they've seen enough from Thielen this year to say that he'd then be their number one next year. I think they probably would go look for another goalkeeper, but it depends what their situation is like in terms of financials and what they can afford. It should be better than it has been, with kind of new ownership structures and new investment and stuff. But yeah, I think, to answer your question, I'm sure they'll activate it, but whether that means he's going to be able to stay is another question.
Yeah, I think he was a player who indicated that he would be interested in leaving at the start of this season, actually. You know, he was one of the Cavi players who very publicly came out and said that post-Varankin, he would be interested in leaving. Ben's point about, you know, there being less interest in him in terms of his performances this year, I think is kind of unfortunate, because I think that's more of a reflection on the overall side rather than Cook's own performances. Because, of course, he's playing behind a poorer defence than was there previously as well, which impacts on kind of how he looks. I think they will want to extend it. Whether that's a mutual agreement, as Ben was saying, I think is another matter. And ultimately, it might well be decided by what offers are actually on the table. Is there anything, you know, that might be kind of tempting him away, you know, a fresh challenge, and how does he feel about how this season's gone as well? That's another aspect to it. But his mind will be fully focused on the cup final at the moment, I suspect.
Let's move on to our second question then. Hopefully we answered that one quite well. This one's from Bag Full of Toffee, who, yes, I presume is an Everton fan. Will Union hold on to Boniface for next season? Discuss. Such a good player who I've followed since he played for Bodo. Think some clubs will come calling. In my dreams, I'd love him at Goodison. There's a very, very high chance that Boniface moves on in the summer. They've already said, the club have come out and said, we're looking to get a record offer for him. And obviously then we won't stand in his way and we'll let him go. They know how they have to operate. They know the value of their players. They value them. It's the same as with Brighton. Like, it's the same kind of model of operating where it's like, we have a valuation of this player. If you come and meet it, we will let him go. We're not going to drag our heels and hold on to him for as long as possible. Like, we know what we want to do. So, yeah, I'd be very surprised if he's still there, given his season, especially in Europe in the summer. I could see a side like Everton going in for him. I can kind of see lots of clubs like that being interested in him. He's got the physical profile that lots of people want. Yeah, he's probably is big and strong enough to do it in the Prem. Whether he's technically good enough for the Prem, it would be another thing. I think he could be. I think he's got good feet, and he's got a reasonably good pass on him as well. Like, he's more than just kind of what people will probably look at as this like brute force of a striker. I think he's definitely better than that.
Yeah, but so far the reported interest seems to come mainly from Italy, from Italian top teams. Well, basically the whole
whole of Italy.
Yeah, the whole of Italy, the whole top five, let's say, or I guess. But yeah, indeed, I think it will be difficult to hold on to him. That's except hopefully that doesn't, hopefully really that doesn't happen. But like, if he doesn't catch anything in the next few games, like injury wise, like he has been prone before, I don't think it's likely that he will be there over the, after the summer still. But where he will end up, we'll have to see. There is of course also that Brighton link. I don't know if they would be looking for. Well, it might also all depend on what Brighton is looking for then, of course. But would that be of interest for them as well? That's a bit, where he will end up is a bit more in the air, but it's that he will go is, what was it, 95% sure, I guess.
I think the key thing here is the fact he's contracted until 2026. So there's going to be a very decent fee in this for Union. So, you know, from a business perspective, it's unfortunate that there's a high probability they're going to lose him, but they're going to receive as Ben was saying, probably a record fee for him.
Yeah, they are going to be very insistent on that, I think, which is how they operate. They've been able to maintain success. So you kind of have to trust their processes are in place. They probably already found the replacement anyway, and they're probably going to bring them in the summer, knowing them. So yeah, as always, thank you very much for your questions. We really do appreciate them coming in. Just before we go, there was some sad news about former Club Bruges goalkeeper Big Jensen passing away. Scott, I know you've probably got some stats for us on that, so why don't you give us a little lowdown on his career?
Yeah, Birger Jensen, of course, you know, Club Bruges fans will know him very well. He's a legendary figure at the Jan Bridal for club fans, passing away this week at the age of 72, playing for club between 1974 and 1988, making 390 appearances. I think he's probably most well known actually for being part of Ernst Happel's legendary club sides, reaching the 1976 UEFA Cup final, which club lost on aggregate, of course, to Liverpool, and then 2 years later, in 1978, club reaching the European Cup final at Wembley, again against Liverpool, losing 1-0 on the night. Club fans, obviously, not the biggest fans of Liverpool, understandably, you know, losing out in those two big European nights. But Jensen had a particularly good game that night in the final at Wembley in 78, making a number of really good saves, so much so that some of the press after the game called him probably the best goalkeeper in the world at this point, and high praise indeed, actually. A key part of Ernst Happel's great Bruges sides of the late 70s in a 14-year period at the Jan Bridal. When he left club, incidentally, actually he went to Lierse for a year, and after that played in amateur football in Belgium, and maintained his links in coaching with amateur sides in Belgian football, and passing away in hospital over the last few days. I think he also had 19 caps for the Danish national side as well in quite a remarkable career. So Belgian football losing another big figure this week, so condolences to Birger Jensen's friends and family and everyone at Club Bruges.
Yeah, absolutely echo all of that as well. A sad loss for Club Bruges and football and everyone else involved as well. I think that probably is all we have time for this week. As always, guys, it's been a pleasure. It's been nice to be back after these long international breaks.
Yeah, it's always long, isn't it? But also glad to be back and the recording. Even if it's a bit later, I'll also apologize for that for our listeners. It's a bit later this week. We hope to be back at a regular timing next week as well.
I'm off now to drink some of the copious amounts of Gudrun Carlos that I brought back from Mechelen.
Very, very jealous of that. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to go and do that, but I'd absolutely love to. As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you like what we do, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. Also, get in touch with us if you want to ask any questions. We're really enjoying these listener questions at the moment. They've been some really, really good ones. And yeah, as always, we'll see you very soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.